Good afternoon, and welcome to the National Press Club. My name is Clayton Boyce, and I'm president of the National Press Club and a news editor with the Knight Ridder Tribune News Service. I'd like to welcome club members and their guests in the audience today, as well as those of you who are watching on C-SPAN or listening to this program on National Public Radio or the Global Internet Computer Network. Before introducing our head table, I'd like to remind members of some upcoming guests. On Wednesday, July 14th, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Donna Shalala, will speak about President Clinton's evolving health care reform package. On Thursday, July 15th, the Secretary of Transportation, Federico Pena, on the administration transportation policy and the gas tax. And on Wednesday, July 21st, Dr. Robert Sheets, the Director of the National Hurricane Center, talks about the prospects of another Hurricane Andrew, and are we ready for the next big one? I'd like to remind you that audio and videotapes of Press Club luncheons are available through the National Press Club Library or by calling 1-800-952-TAPE. If you have any questions for our speaker, please write them on the cards provided at your table and pass them up to me. I'll ask as many as time permits. Yesterday, I came across a story written in 1990 by Melinda Bargreen of the Seattle Times. It was written on the occasion of Jose Carreras' return to Seattle to fulfill a promise to raise money for leukemia research. I liked the story, so I decided to steal it, fair and square, and adapt it for the purpose of introducing our guest today. With apologies to Ms. Bargreen, this is how it goes. The Jose Carreras story. It sounds like the stuff of the Hollywood miniseries. Internationally famous, handsome Spanish tenor is rising to the top of his profession when he is suddenly stricken with leukemia. He is swept across the seas to Seattle for a bone marrow transplant. Will it work? It does. After months of suffering and isolation, he emerges from the hospital, vowing to return and sing a benefit concert for the institution that saved him. He recovers his strength, gives some European concerts that bring sensational acclaim, and chooses Seattle as the site of his U.S. comeback, with all the concert proceeds going to the hospital as part of the newly formed Jose Carreras International Foundation for the Prevention of Leukemia. It's a great script. It also happens to be a true story. Carreras is not just any opera singer. He commands a fanatical international following from whom more than 100,000 letters and telegrams came in encouragement during his illness. His U.S. fans have formed the Jose Carreras Society of America, and some American fans follow him from opera house to opera house around the world. In Europe, the fans are even more hysterical. Members of the European popular press kept flying into Seattle during the tenor's stay at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute, trying to pass themselves off as hospital orderlies so they could sneak in to get interviews and photo opportunities. Photos of the singer were splashed across European tabloids with lurid headlines, much in the manner that American supermarket tabloids report details of the 50-year-old ex-nun who bears triplets fathered by aliens. According to one Carreras watcher, two reporters bribed airline workers to get seats next to the tenor on the flight back from Seattle, bumping even his doctor. More than 150,000 people attended his Welcome Back concert in 1989 in his native Barcelona, and later that year, overflow crowds in the street outside the Vienna Staatsoper watched a recital on a big closed circuit TV screen while the tenor performed to frequent standing ovations. By the end of the concert, many in the house were in tears. Carreras was an early bloomer, unlike many tenors. After being inspired at the age of 6 by seeing Mario Lanza in the film The Great Caruso, Carreras enrolled in the Barcelona Conservatory, and at 11, he had already made his debut in an opera by Manuel de Falla. At 21, he was heard by the brother of diva Montserrat Caballé, and the famed soprano masterminded not only the beginning of his career, but many of his crucial later directions. Carreras made his American debut in 1972 in a New York City opera production of Madame Butterfly. And at 27, he was already at the Metropolitan Opera. What is he like personally? He doesn't like the talk shows, the interviews, the parties. He tries hard to live like a normal person without an entourage, though his illness and the press pursuit has made normalcy all but impossible. Now that's the snapshot that the Seattle Times took of Mr. Carreras in 1990. Since then, he starred with Placido Domingo and Luciano Pavarotti in the Three Tenors Concert, the concert of the century, some called it. He's regained his health and his position at the top of his art. Acute lymphocytic leukemia is a cruel taskmaster, however. Mr. Carreras long ago passed a milestone set by his doctors, 5 years of recurrence-free health. And along the way, he has shown that he is a courageous man who knows how to keep his promises. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jose Carreras.
Mr. President, governors and members of the National Press Club, directors and members of the Friends of Jose Carreras International Leukemia Foundation, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends. Please let me start my brief speech by thanking the President, Board of Governors, and members of the National Press Club for this kind invitation. It is an extraordinary privilege to be able to accompany you in this occasion. I deeply appreciate the honor of allowing me to say to you a few words about my professional and personal life. When I received the invitation, I had to think which was going to be the main topic of my speech. Let me explain briefly the process I followed in order to prepare myself. Faced with the need of choosing among different subjects, I found myself with quite a difficult task. I had several alternatives. I thought that I could talk about the impact that Mario Lanza's film, The Great Caruso, had on me when I was 7 years old, and how it introduced me to the world of music and singing. I was tempted to tell you how happy I was at the time of my first public appearance at the age of 11 years. The Gran Teatro del Liceo in Barcelona invited me to sing the role of Trujamán in the Manuel de Falla's opera, El Retablo de Maese Pedro. The important years of my musical studies and vocal training could, of course, also be mentioned. My professional debut at the Liceo in my hometown in 1970, or my first appearances in the major opera houses in the world, such as the Metropolitan Opera House, Teatro alla Scala in Milano, the Vienna Staatsopera, Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, San Francisco, Chicago, and of course, my very first US performance at the New York City Opera in March 1972. I could also mention the privilege I have had to work together with the most wonderful conductors, singers, and stage directors of my time. Or, needless to say, the most important aim of an artist, which is, in my opinion, to be able to express himself and to communicate with others. I could have also shared with you my personal views of all the different elements that make the opera world possible, from opera house managers, agents, stagehands workers, musicians, chorus members, dancers, supers, costume and set designers. Opera world, let me tell you, is a fascinating one. And also, we all know that opera is the most complete form of performing art. However, I've chosen to leave these subjects to your discretion when later on time will be open for questions. I thought that I would rather take this opportunity to talk about the subject that today is, at least, as important as my professional life, a subject that has taken an extraordinary relevance in my life in the last few years, the fight against leukemia through the José Carreras International Leukemia Foundation. As some of you may know, back in 1987, I was diagnosed with leukemia. My treatment started in Barcelona, and after 4 months of heavy therapy, my doctors in Spain suggested that care should be continued at the Fred Hutchinson Hospital Research Center in Seattle. There, the most prestigious clinical team in the world has been continuously treating patients and conducting the most advanced research in the fight against the disease. This team is led by the Nobel Laureate winner, Professor Donald Thomas, who is honoring me with his presence here today. I arrived in Seattle in October 1987 and remained there during a period of 4 months. An autologous bone marrow transplant was performed. This is a kind of transplant where part of the patient's own bone marrow is first extracted and later cleansed of malignant cells. Radiation and chemotherapy sessions follow. Once reestablished to healthy condition, the bone marrow is infused back into the patient's blood system. After transplant, a few weeks have to elapse in order to check whether the new marrow becomes combative enough and produce healthy blood cells again. A few days before Christmas 87, I was allowed to leave the Fred Hutchinson Hospital and to continue treatment as an outpatient in Seattle. When turning the corner of the new year, bad news emerged. My bone marrow became paralyzed. It stopped regenerating blood cells. The only possible solution to this problem came thanks to a drug recently developed by the Fred Hutchinson. This drug pushed my marrow toward reproducing healthy cells and to a complete recovery. Professor Thomas' team performed the first bone marrow transplant in the 50s. Their clinical excellence is the result of a continuous effort in the loving care of patients and of a permanent and dedicated interest in finding better and better ways of dealing with leukemia. You may be wondering by now why I'm referring to my past circumstances. Let me tell you. I'm trying to find a way to link these past experiences with what I have previously stated about the fight against leukemia. Any one of us, as citizens, and in the unfortunate event of becoming a patient, are perfectly aware of the importance of basic and clinical research in the fight against any disease. However, when this relation has such a determinant impact as it was in my case, the sensation one feels is absolutely overwhelming. The drug that helped me overcome the last problem posed by my illness had been recently developed. Few patients had the chance to have it administered before. I could not be more in debt to the talent and scientific work invested along the years by doctors and researchers. Another extraordinary fact happened during my treatment. All through my illness, I could enjoy the loving care and solidarity of my family and closest friends. I'm lucky enough to belong to a family that keeps very strong ties. Friends and colleagues from the musical world also took the time to express their sympathy and affection through moving letters, phone calls, and visits to the hospitals where I was admitted. Besides all the support received from those closer to me, thousands of persons from all over the world were kind enough to express their affection and solidarity towards me in those difficult moments. I can assure you that all these expressions of affection were fundamental in keeping me on the fight and also in my final recovery. Soon afterwards, I decided I had to find a way to give back to medicine and society all I had been given. I felt that I could and I had to do something to help me pay back the debt. The way to accomplish this objective was to create the José Carreras International Leukemia Foundation. I was a very fortunate patient, but although scientific progress is spectacular and chances of healing this disease have improved dramatically in the last years, the incidence of leukemia among many adult and infant patients across the world still requires continuing efforts in the research, medical care, and social fields. Through the foundation, I could accomplish two objectives. In the first place, I could express my gratitude towards the doctors, scientists, and healthcare professionals. They provided not only their expertise and knowledge, but also, and maybe more important, their human qualities and warmth. In the second place, I wanted to thank the unconditional support received from the society at large. Public administrations all over the world provide scientists with funds and resources to help them in their mission. However, we all know that the task is infinite and additional efforts from the civil society are needed to complement publicly financed activities. More progresses can be achieved if private citizens express their solidarity with patients. Foundations and non-profit institutions devoted to these tasks are a relatively more frequent reality in northern countries than in Spain. I thought that by creating a foundation, my fellow citizens would surely feel stimulated to join along. In 1987, I had the chance to meet the most outstanding scientists and doctors in the clinical research areas. I asked them to accompany me in this new venture. All of them wholeheartedly accepted and have generously put their efforts into the project. I would like to mention Professors Donald Thomas and Dean Buckner from Seattle, and Professor Rothman and Dr. Granyena from Barcelona. Other professionals from the business, law, and communication areas also accepted my invitation, and I am happy to say that our foundation is now a reality. In spite of the fact that this is still young and has a long way to run, several important initiatives have already been put in place. On an annual basis, national and international fellowships are awarded trying to support the most excellent and promising research, both in Spain and worldwide. The press kit distributed contains some additional information about these programs. In cooperation with our public authorities, the Foundation has started the Spanish National Register of Bone Marrow Donors for Allogenic Transplant. An annual sum of approximately $1 million is allocated in the Foundation's budget in order to finance the promotion of donations and the maintenance and expansion of the register. Search for bone marrow is conducted from our office in Barcelona in connection with all existing European and American registers. Our main objectives are to enlarge our donor base and also to help Spanish hospitals develop the infrastructure with diagnostic for leukemia and treatment purposes. A short time after the creation of the foundation in Spain, my dear doctors from Seattle proposed a new venture. They proposed to create the Friends of José Carreras International Leukemia Foundation in the US. My debt with the Medical and Civil Society of America could hardly find a better way to be compensated. Last Tuesday, the board of the Friends of José Carreras International Leukemia Foundation held one of its meetings in San Diego. Having been honored with the presidency of the foundation, it is always a real pleasure to bring whatever contribution I'm asked by Professor Thomas, Dr. Wagner, and all directors and members who graciously dedicate their talent and time. We had the chance to discuss our plans for growth and development. We feel very excited about our potential strength becoming real and effective. I hope that very soon new activities in financing research will provide new techniques and treatments. I would like very much to stress that the main objective of this American-based foundation is to cooperate with other existing American institutions in the pursuit of our common goal. As you know, very prestigious organizations already exist in the US. Their mission is also to help science and patients in multiple manners. Professional associations like the American Society of Hematology and organizations such as the Leukemia Research Foundation, the Marrow Foundation, and the National Marrow Donor Program have a long-standing record of achievements. A couple of years ago, a successful line of cooperation was already started between the Spanish Foundation and the American Society of Hematology. Next year, two research fellowships will be awarded by this joint program. We feel very, very proud of this relationship and look forward to finding further ways of collaboration. The present economic situation makes it difficult for all organizations depending largely on donations to ask for additional efforts from their supporters, either individuals or corporations. Fundraising is also a competitive affair, but despite this fact, I believe that there is still room for appealing to human solidarity. If the popularity of a singer can stimulate people's generosity, I am more than happy to dedicate myself so that scientists and patients can count on larger resources. Some people say that in my professional life I may have achieved most of the aims a singer can dream of. This makes me feel happy and complete as an artist. I hope that the foundation will achieve in the near future all the success that we all dream. Then I will really feel happy and complete as a man. Thank you very much.